Good morning. This is hour number two, Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have here back on the program, Rich Warren. He is the host of a little show we have here on our station. It's carried on a lot of stations. It's called The Midnight Special. So that's part of what he does with his life. But also he writes about consumer electronics and has been doing that for a long time. He has a column that appears regularly in the News Gazette and has written for some of the various kinds of audio-video publications and has spent a lot of time over, I don't know how many years now, trying to keep up with current developments in that field. So we're talking about what's new in things like TVs and CDs and DVDs and all of those sorts of things that people use for their entertainment at home. And every once in a while, we ask him to come and be on the show here and sit and talk a little bit about what's new, because there is, seems like there always is something new to talk about. And for people who are trying to approach this as consumers, they're thinking about buying something to bring into their home. It can be pretty confusing. So what he can do is maybe help you out, at least talk about the various choices there are to make, things to think about when buying particular pieces of equipment. I know he doesn't really like to so much get into recommending particular brands, but any and all sorts of questions about what's new in this field, they are certainly welcome. And all you have to do is pick up the telephone, give us a call, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, good to have you here once again.
It's great to be here. Good morning, David. And before we take those calls that are already lighting up your switchboard here, I want to make a couple of comments. Your previous guest, the 10 o'clock hour this morning, was a very enjoyable program, and he was talking about AM radio. And it got me to thinking that of all the consumer entertainment technologies, AM radio is the oldest and still surviving. When you stop to think about it, there were no talkies in 1922 in the movies, and nobody plays 78 RPM records anymore. And all those technologies have changed. We still have AM radio, and I think there's still a bright future for AM radio because it's so easily received, so cheaply received. And I just find it fascinating that this is 85 years of AM radio, basically, even though KDK signed on in like 1919 or 1920. The big boom came in 1922 when about 85% of the stations in the country, the big stations, signed on. So it's an amazing technology that's still with us. And so it's always great to be on an AM radio station. And as your guest previously said, that's a shame that the mega companies that own the stations have destroyed them with really terrible programming. But that's not the medium's fault, per se. It's just that AM is lower in fidelity than FM. So they figure, well, we'll put the music on FM, put the talk on AM. But rather than having intelligent talk and news like WILL, they've gone to the lowest common denominator, actually below the lowest common denominator. But in any event, AM radio is a survivor. I also wanted to say that I've been covering this field for 32 years now, and I went to every consumer electronics show for 29 years. Mm-hmm. I have not gone to Las Vegas for 2 years now because I'm obsolete and superfluous is what it amounts to. Is I can go on the internet and find bloggers sitting at the press conferences reporting live using Wi-Fi from their laptops. And while I don't trust everything I read from bloggers, there is so much coverage. When I was part of the audio-video press corps for so many years, there were about maybe 25 or 30 of us who regularly covered the Consumer Electronics Show up to about 1996. Now, there's over 1,000 bloggers at the show and a few of the accredited writers who I respect. But it's a whole different scene, and there's no reason to be in Las Vegas anymore because it's all out there, and you can actually participate online virtually live during the whole event. I did spend a lot of time looking at what people were reporting, and it sounds like from both the legitimate magazines and from the bloggers, this probably was one of the most boring consumer electronics shows because there is no new thing. There's no new technology. There's no new iPod. There's no new iPhone. The closest thing was a week later when Steve Jobs introduced the new Macintosh computer. But even that was just evolutionary. It wasn't a whole new technology or a whole new idea. And finally, now that it's just a little over a year away, the conversion to digital television, when we're actually going to make this switch that's been going on for over 20 years in the making, Even the TV sets have settled down. And you mentioned I don't necessarily recommend brand names, but there have been some now clearly defined winners in the TV picture quality business. And the technology has settled down. Finally, you can go out and buy a TV this year and not worry that they're going to change the whole thing next year with something new that's going to obsolete your TV, as long as you buy the right TV this year with the right inputs, et cetera. But they finally, it's settling down, this mass confusion of the past 5 years. I bought a new TV set, I guess it was 6 years ago. It's obsolete. even if I buy the converter box for it, and the coupons are now available for those converter boxes, by the way, they're good for 90 days. I forget the URL, but you go online. Each family is eligible for two coupons. They're worth $40 toward a converter box. I have yet to see a single converter box out there that sells for $40. I think the least expensive at the moment is about $60. But if you don't have a good TV to begin with, you're just going to see basically the conventional picture you've always seen, which is fine, but it's not going to give you HD TV. It's just going to be able to convert the new digital broadcast for your analog TV. So it's just a few things I had in mind when I came over here is that I think things are settling down a little bit in the consumer electronics world. And the other thing that's your previous guest was lamenting, some of these changes being forced on us or not being good changes, I stopped to think about, for example, the iPod. I find two very desirable things about that technology. First, it uses far fewer raw materials than a portable CD player or a portable cassette player. There's actually less to use up in the environment. And they force you to use rechargeable lithium-ion batteries. Very tiny lithium-ion batteries, about half the size of a stick of gum. And first of all, lithium-ion is probably one of the least hazardous of all the battery materials around, so that when it is used up and goes to the landfill, it's probably not going to poison generations down the line. And because it's so tiny, it uses very few resources, rather than having in your portable cassette player or your portable CD player to have to constantly put in alkaline AA cells or, worse still, nickel-cadmium, which is one of the most environmentally hazardous of the battery materials, along with lead-acid. Now we're using relatively, I wouldn't want to eat a lithium-ion battery, but at the same time, it's not going to poison our children for five generations. So there are definitely some improvements as far as the environment's concerned. Also, the new TV sets, an LCD TV, I forget the exact figure, but it uses roughly about 25% the electricity of a cathode ray tube television, because all you're doing is basically lighting a fluorescent light bulb that's around the or behind the screen to light the picture. It's called cold cathode, and fluorescent lights are very energy efficient. So other than the minimal electronics it takes to change the pixels, to change the phase of the open the gates on these little transistors that make up the screen, it's very energy efficient compared to an old-fashioned projection set, cathode ray tube set, you know, picture tube set, as we've called them. Even plasma sets, which use more energy, are more energy efficient than conventional cathode ray tube sets. So we are actually evolving favorably in this new direction as far as the environment's concerned. Our entertainment footprint is actually requiring less energy, thank goodness, than what we had 10 years ago. So I just wanted to make that little statement to begin with, and I see the phone lines are lit up, so if you want to go that way, that's fine with
me. Let's do that. Let's talk with some folks. We will start with a caller in Eureka. That's our first in line and on our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Thank you very much. I have two questions, please. I know, as you've mentioned, the change will come next February to digital. Will the old VHS recorders work, or do they have to have a converter box too? I do understand that with a satellite or a cable system, you don't have to have a converter box.
Over the air, your VHS recorder will require a converter box to make the tuner work. It still will record, though.
I mean, with cable.
Cable, no. The cable companies have promised to keep providing analog signal for several years to come. Now, at some point, they're going to want to drop that, but I think you've got a pretty good breathing space because the government's sort of forcing them to continue to provide analog signal. So if your VHS is connected to cable, then you will continue to be able to record analog programming and play it back just as you always have.
Okay, and do you have any idea how much the high-definition televisions may drop by next year in terms of price?
Well, it depends on screen size, but the price has been plummeting so rapidly, it's absolutely scary. And now with the possible recession in the economy, the manufacturers are probably going to lower prices even more to keep demand up because they're making these panels. They've really got production ramped up finally, both in Korea and Japan and in China. And so they've got an ample number of these panels to sell, and they're going to want them to keep selling because they have to keep these factories running. So I expect the price. Right now, you can buy a perfectly good Samsung 19 or 20-inch high-definition TV for $400 at the big box stores, for example. And I suspect those prices will come down to maybe $3.50, $3.25 a year from now.
They always seem to just advertise the big screen ones on television. I haven't been to a store to look at the 19 or 20 inch. I'm glad to know that. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thank you. We'll go on to next caller. We'll be in Champaign. This is line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. This is probably a question you've been asked 1,000 times, but I'll ask it again because I'm not clear. I'm looking at a high-def TV, and they have the different resolution of 720 and, like, 1080. And then it seems to be a big thing is the contrast. I have a follow-up question, but it seems to me the 720, unless you're, you know, sitting right next to it and watching a Blu-ray, that your average person's not going to notice that much difference.
You're right. 720 and 1080i, 720p and 1080i are visually comparable. The difference is it depends on the set itself because LCD displays have what's called a native resolution. So as long as the native resolution is basically what you're watching, and the problem is the TV networks, some of them are 1080i and some of them are 720p. Now, you, again, as you said, you're probably not going to see a great deal of difference, but there is a slight difference if you're watching the native resolution on the source. So if you're watching, I guess it's, let's see, CBS is 1080i, and you're watching on a 1080i display, it's going to look ever so subtly better than watching the same thing on a 720. They can convert it. It'll look fine. It's not that you can't watch it or you're not going to get HD, but there'll be a subtle difference. And now, of course, they're promoting the 1080p sets, and the only way you're going to see that improvement is if you buy Blu-ray discs, because that's basically... However, now the sets come with up converters that improve the 1080i to 1080p. So depending on how the manufacturer accomplishes that task, you may actually see a better picture on a 1080p set, depending on the source and how well the TV set converts it. But you are right that if you're just looking as a matter of price and if you're not going to buy a jumbo screen, I think once you get over 40 inches, then you start to have to pay more attention. But below 40 inches in the screen, I think you're fine with the lower resolution, or not lower resolution, but the 720p value at this point. And the prices for that, they're getting rid of them because they're not going to be around much longer. So it's a good value.
Okay. One other quick question. I try and run my sound through an old receiver from Good Vibes back in the good old days. Can you run a TV output audio really through a stereo? I mean, it seems like at the big box stores, they want to sell you all this surround sound and, you know, you're going to pay three times for surround sound what you paid for your TV. I mean, what are the solutions there with a conventional stereo, if there are any?
If you want just plain stereo, I think most of the TVs still have a conventional left and right audio output, which you can plug into a stereo receiver. They also, of course, have the multiple outputs and the HDMI cable and all this kind of thing. But I think that most of the sets still have a conventional left-right stereo output, so you can plug that into your receiver and hear fine stereo sound. I do think surround sound is beneficial, and with the new HD standard, a lot of TV programs are transmitted in surround sound. It's cost them no extra, really, these days, since all the movies are made in surround sound. And as far as buying a surround sound system, you can find some fairly inexpensive ones under $1,000 that do a very good job of giving you the full surround sound with a subwoofer and all that and take up very little space. Most of the speakers are, some of them are as small as, you know, a deck of cards, and others are probably the size of a paperback book, but they can provide surprisingly good sound these days for a reasonable price.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, has written for other national publications. And every once in a while, he's here on the program. We talk about what's new in this area. If you have questions about TVs or DVDs or whatever, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. There might even be people out there who still have turntables. You never can tell.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I do have a turntable, and I have one of the finest phonograph cartridges ever made, the Shure V15 Type 5 MR, and in fact, the same cartridge that WFMT uses for its broadcasts on the air. And WFMT had an arrangement with Shure that, because Mr. Shure himself, Sidney Shure, was a great fan of the radio station, that for eternity, Shure Brothers would give WFMT replacement styli. Mm-hmm. At last batch they sent to Shure, they got a note back saying, "Sorry, we don't make them anymore. We have one cartridge, which we will continue to manufacture replacement styli for, but all our other cartridges are history." In fact, I went to replace my own personal stylus, and luckily I know somebody who runs a stereo store up in Chicago, and he said, we have one left in the back room. I'll get it to you. And that's it. If I bust my stylus, I'm going to be playing with a knitting needle. So, yeah, people do have turntables, and unfortunately, yeah, there's still plenty of cheap cartridges out there you can buy that will reproduce records. But if you were a perfectionist, there are some audiophile cartridges if you want to spend $2,000 for your replacement styli that are still around. Mm-hmm. But the great high-end mass-market cartridges from Shure and similar companies are history.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go on. Talk with some more folks. Somebody here on a cell phone, line 3. Hello?
Yeah, hi. The price of HDMI cables ranges from like $10 to $100. Is there really that big of a difference in the quality or the signal that you're going to get?
No. It's the same typical consumer deceptive practice that they've been doing with cables for the past 25, 30 years. You know, all these fancy speaker wires, all these fancy interconnects. Yes, with HDMI, you do need a good quality connector that has to be mechanically secure and well put together. And they're going to tell you, oh, yeah, but you really need this gold wire and all this. It just ain't so. As long as you buy a decent quality cable, and it may not be the $10 cable, but it doesn't have to be the $100 cable, okay, you're fine.
Okay, gotcha. And you did mention Blu-ray discs. I'm in the market for a DVD player. I'm a little concerned about the difference between HD, DVD, and Blu-ray and the competition that's going on between these two technologies. You know, how's it going to shake out? Who's going to come out on top? And, you know, what ultimately will be the most more widely available format?
Well, at this point, if you had asked me a month ago, I probably couldn't have told you. And now I can tell you that Blu-ray is going to be the standard. Just before the Consumer Electronics Show, about 3 days before this show, Warner Home Video announced that it was going to exclusively support Blu-ray. And you say, well, what's so big about Warner Home Video? Well, Warner was the company that made the standard DVDs succeed. They flooded the market with DVDs when nobody else was willing to do so. They have one of the largest film libraries in the world. They have one of the largest marketing departments in the world. And suddenly, after Warner Home Video announced they were going to exclusively support Blu-ray, everybody else sort of piled on. And in fact, Toshiba's press conference, I understand, in Las Vegas, mm-hmm, was, they were saying, oh, we're still going to market HD and all, we're going to survive, but it just probably is not going to happen because there is no room for two systems. Some pundits believe that Microsoft really instigated this competition because they want high-definition video discs to fail so that everybody can provide high-definition video on the Internet and do away with discs altogether.
Okay.
But at this point, it looks like Blu-ray is the winner, and also it is more technologically advanced than HD was. And in fact, you can buy computer drives that record in Blu-ray, which you couldn't do with HD. So I think overall the momentum is gaining. And for once, Sony and Moshista, which is now officially called Panasonic, are on the same side of the fence. And when you have the two largest consumer marketers joining hands in this thing, I think you're going to see that Blu-ray will succeed.
Okay, that's a great help. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
So just a quick question. If you have a conventional CD player and you get a Blu-ray DVD player and you get a Blu-ray DVD and you put that in your old-fashioned player, what happens? Nothing?
Well, the old disc will play in your new player. The new discs will not play in
your old player. Okay, so if you have a library of old discs and you go out and buy a new DVD player that will play the Blu-ray, you can still play all your old discs, but you can't take a Blu-ray and put it in your old player and have something
right.
Come
it's
out.
Right. It's sort of like the DVD players will play CDs. They have a second laser that's tuned to the old frequency, and it'll play the mm-hmm. old DVD. So you will still have access to your library.
So now then, for how long do we think we're going to have maybe the question is, how long are we going to really have DVDs?
Well, as long as they're selling like hotcakes, which they are, I'm predicting another 5 to 10 years. But anytime if you follow what's happening to compact discs, to audio CDs, and the sales of them have plummeted off the edge of a cliff, mm-hmm. and suddenly if you go to any of the bookstores that used to sell CDs and find the CD selection is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, and realizing that most people are now downloading, especially now that you can download without digital rights management, you can download uncopy protected material, which is the thing that was stalling downloads because people wanted to be able to put them on their various home systems without having to buy it again each time. I think DVD, because even with broadband, downloading video is very time-consuming at this point. And as the cable and DSL providers ramp up their bandwidth so that you can download a high-definition video in an hour instead of 5 hours, then you're going to see the need for discs disappear, because why go out and buy or rent a disc or even do Netflix when you could punch a button? And in fact, there's a couple of new systems out where they're constantly downloading the top 50 movies into your box, into your hard drive, without you even knowing it. So when you ask it to play a movie, if it's one of those movies, it comes up instantaneously. And there's another system out there that makes everybody's computer part of a huge network. So it downloads bits and pieces of 1,000 movies onto everybody's computer. And then when it's like this BitTorrent they use for fast downloading. And so when you want to watch a particular movie, suddenly they draw on 1,000 other people's computers to feed you the movie, and suddenly it's there in half an hour. So all these things are eventually going to obsolete DVD and Blu-ray. However, there are purposes for recording Blu-ray on your computer, for example, for data archiving and things that you don't want to just leave on your hard drive. But everything's going to be hard drive-oriented. With terabyte hard drives cheap now, you can buy what, $300 out there, and a 2 terabyte hard drive is going to be here by the end of the year. You can hold a lot of high definition movies on a 2 terabyte hard drive. And if the cost of things is only going to be $300, you stick it in your computer, and there can be 50 movies sitting in your computer any one time. So,
yeah. All right. Well, let's go back here to the callers and talk to somebody in Chicago. Line one. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. I think we've talked before. I believe you're right, Rich. I once heard a satellite company, and I'm not going to mention the name, but they keep talking about they have a DVR that can put 500 hours on their thing. I don't know how they can do that, but I think you're right. I think pretty soon the day will come when the disc will disappear. As a matter of fact, it wouldn't be surprising now if there are shows like There Will Be Blood on the Internet right now, even though they're not supposed to be, but they probably are.
I think that the key... You mentioned everything you say is right. The key is controlling theft, that is, controlling piracy and making sure that people pay for what they view, which is only right. And they are starting to solve this problem. And I think that pretty soon, the way they can store so many on a hard drive, it's very simple. Is that, for example, DVDs use a system called MPEG-2, which when it was unveiled 15 years ago or so was remarkable because MPEG-1 was so bad. MPEG-2 is fabulous. Well, we're up to MPEG-4 now. And MPEG-4 is more than twice as efficient as MPEG-2 in squeezing down the data so that you can have higher quality but less storage space. So who knows, I mean, if there's going to be MPEG-6 or MPEG-8 or whatever it's going to go up to, but they're constantly working on new algorithms and new ways of compacting this data to take less space so they can send it across the Internet and have it download in very rapid sequence.
Well, I'm not going to mention the satellite company, Dave, so don't get worried. But I just wondered how they could do that 500-hour thing. I thought to myself, my God, they must have a huge hard drive.
Yeah, they do. And as I said, hard drives are so cheap now. And then now coming online are solid-state hard drives that have no moving parts. They're non-volatile memory that operate 2, 3, 4 times faster than conventional hard drive. In fact, I just bought a small one to load my operating system on for my new PC. And right now they're ridiculously expensive. You pay $650, $700 for like 18 gigabit drive. But in 2 years, you're going to have 150 or 200 gigabit hard solid-state hard drives that are going to cost, you know, $100 or $50 or whatever.
And they'll be removable, so when you fill them up, you'll be able to take it out and put in another one. So
yeah, they're already hot swappable, so it's... The technology is moving so rapidly.
If I buy a DVD player, if I buy a DVR...
Well, what I'd suggest to people, by the way, is, although I don't think next year we're in any danger of this, but a lot of people are lamenting, oh, I should have bought another VCR because now you hardly can find them and I have all these tapes I want to play, is, you know, buy a nice brand new DVD player. It costs you $125, a good one, not the kind they sell at the
Well, now they
store.
Have VCR and DVD combo, so.
Yeah, but even those are going away.
Yeah.
But to buy a good DVD player and put it on the top shelf of the closet and leave it there if you have a library so that 5 years from now, when your DVD player gives out and you discover there aren't any on the shelf, you have that spare to watch your library.
Yeah, you got a backup. Listen, I'm going to hurry up because I know you got a lot of callers. But I was curious now, on February, like you mentioned, they're going to switch to digital television. Do you think the day will come when they will say, all right, now you have to have digital high-definition radio, and we won't tolerate anything else?
I don't think the economic interests are aligned at this point to demand that. Plus, there are some real flaws with high-definition radio that don't exist with high-definition television.
I've heard that the sound was very good.
The sound can be very good, but it's also a question of whether HD radio is truly going to succeed. It's penetrated the market, but it's just not selling a lot of radios at the moment.
Well, they're expensive. I called a place out in California, and I think they said they had one for, what was it, $299 or something like that.
Well, you can get them for $100. They are available, but it's still too early to judge whether the system is going to fly or not.
Okay, just one more question. Now, I know they have satellite radio, but if you can listen to the radio on the Internet, why buy the satellite thing?
Well, at the moment, you can't get the Internet in your car or on your bicycle or when you're jogging, which you can with the satellite. However, again, 5 years from now, we are entering one of the biggest things at CES that was important, and it's being backed by Intel and a lot of very large telecommunications companies, is called WiMAX. And this is Wi-Fi on steroids. It's sort of a combination of Wi-Fi and cell phone technology that will allow you to tune the Internet wirelessly anywhere you are, other than far rural places. But you could be anywhere and have a tuner on you that could tune the Internet. So you could find websites, but you also could find all 50,000 radio stations that are now on the Internet. So
50,000?
Oh, but the entire world. Remember, it doesn't matter whether you're in Champaign or Chicago or Perth, Australia. On the Internet, it's all the same.
Rich, are you sure there are that many?
Well, there's 50,000 stations alone in the United States, so not all on the Internet, but they're out there transmitting. We should count them all. And not that they're necessarily we need all those stations, but they're there. So there's an enormous variety of what's going to be available on the Internet, and that is a very big threat to satellite radio. And satellite radio is trying to establish this beachhead.
Well, don't they charge you for all those stations? If you get 50,000, you can't get them for free.
Well, you pay for your WiMAX connection like you would pay for your cell phone connection, but you probably would not pay per source. That is, you pay for the package like your Internet connection. But then everything you tune, except for some special content that if a station wishes to charge, they probably could. But otherwise, whatever's out there is yours to take if there's no surcharge on it from the provider.
You could listen to just about any game in the country if you had that many.
Yeah, unless the Football League decides to black it out and charge for it.
Which they will, because they're into money. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. My experience with satellite radio was quite limited. It was only one time that I can think of, and it was when I happened to have a rental car that had it. And I guess and I sort of tooled around and saw what was there. And I guess my one reaction to it was that I thought that the audio quality, the sound quality, was actually very poor.
Which satellite radio you were using?
I don't remember which one it was.
Depending on the receiver, I listen to XM because I'm prejudiced. My show is on XM, and I find the quality quite good. However, according to people I deeply respect who are engineers, the compression system used by Sirius is inferior to the compression system used by XM. And there were times where it's improved now. But also what Sirius is trying to do is they're transmitting television now on their satellite radio for children. There's three or four channels of children's programming that you can put in the backseat of your car and keep your kids entertained while you're driving. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, it's a fairly low bitrate video, so the quality is not good. But what they're doing is they're taking away bandwidth from all the audio channels in order to provide this video, which XM has not started doing yet. So, again, there's this deliberate reduction of sound quality to provide more different services. If you want to hear truly bad sound quality, go to the traffic reports on XM. These are bandwidth limited, and it sounds like, even though there are human beings actually giving the traffic reports, they're not mechanical voices. It sounds like they're mechanical voices. They sound so weird because they're giving them this very, very tiny amount of space to because all you need is the information that the Dan Ryan is congested. That's all you need to hear. You don't need a wide fidelity signal. But the music channels, and also depends on the channel. They provide some channels more bandwidth than others. But I don't think it's CD quality quite CD quality, but it's pretty close.
Yeah. Right. Rich Warren is our guest. He writes about consumer electronics for the News Gazette. Our paper here in Champaign-Urbana has written for other national publications, and every once in a while he's here on the program, and we talk about what's new in the way of consumer electronics. So if you have questions about audio, video, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And the next caller is in Effingham, line 4. Hello.
Oh, yeah. I got a turntable also. But the reason why I'm calling is I got an antenna with a flat screen. Mm. Now, I've been arguing with my sons, and he said I'm going to have something after they make high definition. Now I'm going to be able to get, I won't be able to get the stations anymore. Is that so?
Well, does your TV have, in fact, a digital tuner?
Oh, that I couldn't tell you.
See, not all flat-screen TVs have the digital tuner. Until about a year ago, it wasn't mandatory. If you don't have the digital tuner built into your TV, you will need the adapter box, even with an outdoor antenna attached to it. So you will need the adapter to go from digital back to analog if you don't have the digital tuner built into the TV.
Okay. Well, I bought my flat-screen probably about 5 years ago, so probably it don't have a digital tuner in it, probably.
Probably not.
Okay, thank you. You answered my question.
All right, thank you. And next we'll talk with someone in Urbana. Line 3. Hello.
Hello?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you want to get an iPod, is there any place that will teach you to use it?
That's a wonderful question, and you know, it's I have to admit, I just bought a couple iPods for Christmas. And the instructions that come with them are pathetic. It says, you know, plug the headphone in, plug the power in, that's it. And I go to the iTunes site, which you have to, the one thing about iPods I really dislike is you have to use them with Apple's own iTunes site, which I don't find, at least in the Windows incarnation of it, very user-friendly. There's a lot of things that they don't tell you. There's a help screen.
Oh, but, you have to have an Apple computer?
No. You can use any computer with an iPod.
Oh.
But with the Windows version of iTunes, it's not as intuitive to the user as with the Apple version of iTunes.
Oh.
They're slightly different. But I don't know. All I can say is if you could find a local merchant who sells iPods, not a big box store, but somebody who actually cares about what they sell, they might be able to give you some instructions on how to use it. Or, barring that, find the nearest teenager.
Wonderful.
Because he or she has figured out, I mean, it's in the DNA of teenagers now how to use these things, and the rest of us have to learn.
I believe you.
So, yeah, it's pathetic, and actually you might even go out and look at the bookstore to see if there's some, like, Idiot's Guide to iPods, because that may be your only hope to find instructions for the thing. I really resent how little information they give you. I bought an iPod for my partner at Christmas, and she ran to her recent vintage iMac computer, plugged it in, and the computer told her, sorry, your operating system is not recent enough to use this iPod.
Oh, good night.
There was nothing on the iPod that said that. And finally, I have a friend who is very savvy in these things, and he said, well, she was at 4.93, and you have to go to 4.94, or whatever the iteration of the operating system was.
Oh.
And I think that is really, pardon the car talk phrase, bogus. I mean, this is outrageous that they would make you upgrade your operating system to use an iPod. Now, I haven't even tried it on my Windows PC yet because I have an older iPod I've been using. And I'm wondering if I'm going to have to upgrade the Windows Vista to use the iPod because they don't tell you in the packaging. It's not at all.
Mm-hmm.
All they sell you is this little tiny box.
Well, it's worse than I thought it was.
Yeah, it's a little fold-out sheet that shows you how to plug the thing into the power supply and into headphones. And basically says, and then go online to iTunes and we'll, you know, you can hit the help button. I just think that's not fair to the consumer, but that's the way things are being sold these days. You can buy a $3,000 laptop computer which comes with one sheet of information. The rest you have to find on the computer. And the horrible thing is if you're not familiar with the computer or if it crashes, you can't access the help menus.
Yeah.
So they assume that you're knowledgeable and that they don't have to tell you anything because it's cheaper. If they have to put a second sheet of paper in there, that lowers their profit margin. And let me tell you, the profit margin on, if you wonder why Apple stock is going through the roof, it's not merely that more people are buying them. It's that the cost of making an iPod is so ridiculously low compared to the cost of selling it. Mm-hmm. Once the R&D, the research and development, has been amortized, I think the actual cost of making one of those things is less than 50% of the selling price. So they don't want to spend a couple extra pennies because that would lower their profit margin.
Oh, boy. Well, thank you so much.
All right, thanks. So you mean that you can't, if you have an iPod, and even if you have a Mac, you can't go to your CD collection, rip some tunes off your own CDs, stuff them into your computer, and then stuff them into the iPod? You have to buy the songs from Apple?
No, no, you can do that only if the iPod matches your computer's operating system.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, yes.
No, you can, in fact, rip CDs. I do that all the time. Although the RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, now doesn't even like that idea. They say you're stealing their property if you do that, which is...
Even if you've already paid
for
it?
Yeah, they think now that even if you memorize the tune, you should pay for it from your memory, you know. Yeah. It's a really controversial thing about that sort of thing. They haven't taken any legal action against people who do that, except for one guy in Minnesota now who was doing something that wasn't quite kosher with ripping his CDs into the computer. And I guess he made it available to other people, and that's what really got them upset. But you can, in fact, easily rip your CDs. That's the easiest thing to do with iTunes, as a matter of fact, is rip your own CDs into the iPod.
All right. We'll keep going here, and we'll talk next with somebody in Champaign, and this would be line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here with an LG Super Multi-DVD VHS recorder with digital tuner. What's happened is that I take, and I'm not very sophisticated at all when it comes to electronics, but anyway, what I do is I use this Philips, and I get a super definition one. I take it off the air. If I get a new digital TV, could I still do that then, or is it going to have the place to do that?
I think it will, depending on the set. Of course, all the new digital TVs still have analog tuners in them at this point, so you can still tune analog broadcasts. And most of them that I've seen still have some sort of analog input. You don't have to use the HDMI input. There's still probably an analog input. So you probably could continue doing that at this point. 2 or 3 years down the line, I wouldn't guarantee it.
Okay, that's the reason I haven't opened it yet is I'm deciding. I also understand too is that you could get to play with a Blu-ray, that kind of thing. This doesn't have it has so many bells and whistles on it. Progressive Scan, I don't know, all kinds of stuff. Dolby, MP3, and all that kind of stuff. I would be able to add that, right? In other words, get a player for that. Is that correct for the Blu-ray?
Yeah, I'd have to see your setup, but yeah, you could add a Blu-ray to your system, even if you couldn't. Thing is, I have to see what the connection is. It has to have an HDMI connector to go from Blu-ray to a monitor to see HD from the Blu-ray on the monitor.
It has to have an HD what?
It's called HDMI connector. Oh. High definition multimedia interface connector.
Wow.
Otherwise, you can't. That's for their copy protection. Otherwise, you can't simply connect the audio and video outputs of the player to the TV. You will see a picture, but you won't see HD.
Okay. But in terms of the quest continues. Thank you.
And let me confuse you one step further is that there are now three flavors of HDMI connectors because the first was 1.1 and they improved it to 1.2 and now it's 1.3. And it's 1.3 with VX color, which is a wider color bandwidth. So it gets even more confusing, but don't buy a set or a source that doesn't have a HDMI 1.3 connector.
1.3.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right. When I go to get my next TV, I'm taking you with me. I'm bringing you up down to the store. That's the only way that I'm possibly going to be able to figure out how to do that.
Hey, I've actually been on a quest. I'm about to buy a new TV finally. I've had this big widescreen Toshiba projection set since the year 2001. And I've decided I really want to take the plunge in the full digital HD experience. And even though my set will display an HD picture, it doesn't have HDMI connectors, so I wouldn't be able to use a Blu-ray player, for example. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing weeks worth of research on the internet and with friends who I trust and reading critics I trust. And it's just mind-boggling to find out, do I want LCD versus plasma? If you're a purist and a perfectionist, you want plasma. Mm-hmm. But you also need a fairly dark room because plasma doesn't look good in bright light. Plasma is dimmer but more accurate in its tonal picture quality. The color balance is more accurate. LCD is brighter and it's less subject to damage. but it's not quite as accurate, and also it's a little bit less expensive at this point than plasma. So it's a real hunt. I mean, I've narrowed it down to two possibilities, but they're $1,000 apart. I mean, for $3,000, I can buy Sony's best LCD set, which has gotten rave reviews from everybody who's reviewed it, their XBR4. Or I can buy the Pioneer 50-inch, which has gotten rave reviews from everybody who's viewed it, but it's $1,000 more. It's $4,000 or $4,500. Of course, you get 4 more inches of screen, too, so it's not apples, you know, not directly apples to apples. But trying to figure out that, well, one critic says that the green on the Pioneer isn't quite perfect, you know, and somebody says on the Sony, well, the red isn't quite perfect, you know, and it's like you have to go out and look at a place, go to a local dealer who knows how to show these things, knows how to sell them, who will let you sit there and watch it for half an hour or an hour. Because if you go to the big box store, the lighting is wrong, the sets are poorly adjusted, and they just don't know what they're selling. They just want to move the tonnage out the door. And you really need to go to one of the local dealers who will let you sit there and actually watch the set and compare it with other sets on the floor to see if you like it.
And that also does help if you have a problem. Then you have somebody that you can go back and say, look, I got some kind of a problem. You need to fix it. You're much more likely to get some help that way than if you've either gone by the big box or that if you, you know, say you go, say you can find some way that you can buy it over the internet because you're hunting the lowest price.
Well, in fact, I just got a letter. It's going to be in my column next Monday in the News Gazette from a reader who I've been taking a survey, and he said that he bought a Mitsubishi at one of the big box stores, and after 9 or 10 months, something went wrong with it, and the big box store didn't want anything to do with it, but he did call Mitsubishi. They were very responsive, incredibly responsive, and teamed him up with radio doctors here in town who's been in business for 100 years. They've I think they were repairing AM radios in 1923. And radio doctors was there like in a flash, fixed the problem. He said it has no further problems. A second reader, however, said they bought the extended warranty from one of the big box stores on a different brand, on a Samsung, I guess it was. And it's taken 3 months to get it fixed, and it still hasn't been fixed right from a company out of town who has to send a technician here from Bloomington or gosh knows where. So there's your difference. Whereas a local store, and all the local dealers are quite reputable in this town, would either send one of their own people out to your house or come out and make sure that whatever technician needed was going to be there. I mean, their entire business depends on it. They don't have to worry about selling, you know, cameras and cell phones and GPS units. They're selling you a TV set because that's their business. So consider that.
All right. To another caller here. This would be Champagne, line 2. Hello.
How are you?
Good.
If you would, please, I'm interested in, and if you would just ramble on and tell me what you know about or what you think about these internet radio receivers. SendGrain has one as an example and so forth. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I have not reviewed or played with any of those. I did, in fact, get a
Sanjin. Well, you can't know about everything.
Yeah, there's just too much stuff out there. I did get a Sanjin HD radio, and it was the worst radio I have ever had in my history of reviewing radios.
Mm-hmm.
The fidelity was lackluster. The reception quality was pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in my office, I have a lot of electrical computers running and stuff, and I have a number of different AM radios because I'm addicted to WILL.
And, yeah, well, it's two of us. Mm-hmm.
And they all pick up a little bit of background noise from the computers and everything or the fluorescent lights. This radio wouldn't pick up WILL at all. That's how bad it was. So and some people rave about these Sanjin radios, and I thought, other than the fact that it was attractive in a wood case, it was a pathetic radio.
Don't the HD radios require a good external antenna?
Oh, sure. And, I mean, this came with the usual ferrite loop, and I put it near the window and everything, and it just didn't seem to work very well.
Mm-hmm.
And in the one station in town, there's only one station in Champaign, at least there was 4 months ago, that was broadcasting in FM HD. And, frankly, they were simulcasting, so I could compare the regular FM signal with the HD signal, and I couldn't hear any difference, which I should be able to hear better sound on the HD.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as internet radios, it's really hard to say. I mean, the way I use internet radio is I have a very fancy sound card, and it goes through a complete stereo system with a big fancy Denon receiver and B&W speaker, so I get great sound off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a broadband connection. That's all you need, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these devices seem to be what little I've little research I've done on them. They seem to be they're a standalone unit, which simplifies the whole process of hooking them up to a sound system and so forth. If you've got a wireless router in your house, it'll pick up the connect the internet via that and so on and so forth. So, well, thank you anyway.
All right. Go to another champagne person, line three. Hello.
Hi. My question is about MP3 players for a little different use. I've been thinking of getting one for listening to books because the local library system here allows download of books, recorded books. And I didn't know what would be compatible. I was thinking, well, let me go for the top of the line and get the iPod. And then they had a link through the library with compatible devices, and most of them seem to be telephone manufacturers. So I'm wondering if you know anything about this or can provide a recommendation.
That's an interesting question, and it's something I have not investigated. Theoretically, anything you can get over the computer should be able to be loaded, I mean, as a podcast, more or less, is loaded. And, of course, the great thing about an MP3 device for talking books and books on tape kind of things is since you don't need a lot of bandwidth, you could store hundreds of books on a single MP3 player because it doesn't take a lot of – you can do a 64 kilobits per second or even less and still get full fidelity on human voice. But as far as being compatible with the library, I'd have to investigate that because I have not tried to use their services in this respect, and I'm wondering if there's also some proprietary issues because an iPod only works through iTunes. And even if you're loading your own CDs, you have to do it through iTunes. If the library source is not compatible or part of iTunes, it will not load into an iPod. And whereas if you got like a Zune from Microsoft, there's two or three services like I think Rhapsody and a couple others that are compatible with that. So you have to find out which player is compatible with which source. And That's about all I can tell you is that all these MP3 players are not all compatible with all the sources. And that's a real hassle.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Line one next. We're trying to get at least one more caller here. This is also Champagne. Hello.
Hi. Am I on?
Yes.
Hey, I've got a question. Speaking of libraries, about digital rights media. When I go to the library, I notice people checking out probably piles of CDs and DVDs, and I think to myself, you know, that's a lot more than either people have a lot more time than I do or to listen and watch things, but my gut feeling is people are just ripping music from the local library and putting on their hard drives, and that seems to be about as big a problem as copying music as I've seen, like, through the Internet. And then I'd just be interested in what your comments on that are. It's probably a large subject, but... or if there's any movement to help stem that, I guess.
Well, I have to make...
I don't particularly do it myself, and I wonder about it.
I have to make a confession. When I was 14, I went to the public library, took out LPs, and recorded them to open reel tape.
Yeah.
And I didn't think there was anything wrong with doing that at the time. It didn't dawn on me that it was somebody's rights to this material. I think it's ethically wrong to take public media, that is things from the library, and use them in the sense that you're keeping them. It's one thing if you take a video out of the library and you don't have time to watch it, so you put it on your, you know, you copy it and you watch it, then you destroy it and watch the next one or whatever, as far as time shifting kind of thing. But a lot of people are also putting these on servers and sending them out over the internet, which I think is wrong. I think the library exists to give people a chance to hear music without paying for it, but not to own that music without paying for it. There's a big difference between listening and owning. And I think people have to remember that those who create the music, those who write the songs, those who perform the songs, those who take the financial risk of packaging that music and making it available need to have a financial return or we don't have art. The state's not subsidizing art like they did. The princes aren't paying for the composers as they did in the 18th century. So I have nothing against people taking – I think it's great that people can take material out of the library and expose themselves to a whole bunch of new material or hear something again they heard on the radio they want to hear again. But if they want to keep that material, they should go out and either download it, pay for it, download, or buy it from a local store. I think that's very important. But I just wanted to add here, I know we're out of time, but and I forgot the date, but I think the second Tuesday in March, I'll be giving a talk in person at the Champaign Public Library, speaking of libraries, to answer your questions about this very kind of thing. I'll be there, I think it's 7 o'clock at night, and I forget what the second Tuesday in March, it's like March 11th or something, but I will be at the Champaign Public Library. Look for a mention of that in the News Gazette in the coming weeks because I'd love to answer your questions in person, and this way you can see me and we can see each other and not depend on the blinking light in David's panel here. So if you're interested, watch for the notices from the Champaign Public Library.
All right. Thank you very
much.
Okay.
We'll try and do one more caller, and that would be Muhammad, line two. Hello.
Hi. I hope you can help an ear in the wilderness, sort of. We're out far in the country where we don't have a server connection, cable, or anything else, and the internet consequently is just at the speed of the telephone. There was a unit described in recent magazines from Motorola that was going to be an allied relationship with Sprint, a unit that would be like a portable modem that would then wirelessly cast whatever was received from internet signals and allow internet access with this unit available in the service from Sprint. Do you know anything about that? It's possible time or it's real existence?
I don't think that's available in our area, and I tend to doubt it's going to be available in our area. You have basically two choices. There is some wireless internet, high-speed internet around Mahomet. There's a company that provides that from the grain elevator in Mahomet. And I don't know how far it reaches. You need a straight line of sight to that grain elevator on Illinois 47 there near 150. And that can give you high-speed internet, or you can, which is a reasonable, fairly reasonable price, or you need satellite service from one of the, like DirecTV has a affiliated company that provides high-speed broadband internet from satellite, and that's expensive. It's about $75, $80 a month.
Yes.
Those are basically your only two choices at the moment. I don't think we're going to be seeing that Sprint service in this area.
Well, why is that? Is it geography or political system, or what's the problem with it?
Well, it's economics and politics. Sprint is actually having some very severe financial difficulties at the moment, and they're only going to markets with dense concentrations of people where they can get a lot of subscription return, and that's one of the things that we really need to address in this country is serving rural people with high-speed internet, because being disenfranchised now from high-speed internet is not acceptable.
Well, that's the truth.
And
well, thanks very much.
Sure.
Thinking about the grain elevator, I've seen the ad. I'll have to check into that.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. I'm sorry we got one more person we can't take. We've got to leave it with the promise that I'm sure on another day Rich will be back. You can look for his column in the News Gazette newspaper on
Mondays.
And then that show, Midnight Special. When is that on?
2 o'clock Saturday afternoons on Focus 580, AM 580. And it's an honor to be on this radio station.
Oh, yeah. Rich Warren, he is the host of the Midnight Special. And again, look for his column in the News Gazette.